Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Mo H. and I am a recovered compulsive overeater from Walnut Creek, California. Today is Friday, May 31st, and this is the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. And we will be reading the text in There Is a Solution, page 22. The fourth paragraph down, beginning with, we know that while the alcoholic keeps away, through one paragraph ending with, the experience of any alcoholic will abundantly confirm this, and the comments will be on that one paragraph only. Today's readers are the 12 Steps, Mary P., the 12 Traditions, Vanessa G., and the readers of the text are Wendy M. and Chanel P. The share ID for Thursday, the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, May 30th, is 21,448. That's 21448. And Friday, this morning's meeting, May 31st, 7 a.m. Eastern Time, is 21,450. That's 21450. Our newcomer greeter is Diane B., and our announcements person is Shelley E. Thank you all for your service this month. OA preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose, OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At A Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. And here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. And I will now ask Mary P. to read the 12 steps of OA. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning, Mo. Thanks. This is Mary P. in Texas. And these are the 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. One, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thanks for letting me be of service this morning, and I will pass.
Well, thank you very much, Mary P. from Texas. Up next is... Now I will ask Vanessa G. to read the 12 Traditions of OA. Good morning, Vanessa.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Vanessa G. I am a recovered compulsive overeater in New Mexico. And these are the 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. 1. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2. For our good purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3. The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups. 4. OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible for those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you for letting me be of service.
Thank you, Vanessa G. from New Mexico. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute your phone, and once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, and then press star 1 to remute your phone again. To have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker's should be muted. And today we resume our study of the Big Book, and we are on page 22 of There Is a Solution, the fourth paragraph down at the bottom of the page, and it begins with, we know that while the alcoholic keeps away from drink, and it ends at the top of page 23, the experience of any alcoholic will abundantly confirm this. And I will now ask Wendy M. to begin reading. Good morning, Wendy.
Yes, good morning, Wendy M., recovered in Boulder, Colorado. Thank you, Mo, for your service and everybody on the line. We know that while the alcoholic keeps away from drink, as he may do for months or years, he reacts much like other men. We are equally positive that once he takes any alcohol, whatever, into his system, something happens both in the bodily and mental sense, which makes it virtually impossible for him to stop. The experience of any alcoholic will abundantly confirm this. Yes, yes, ma'am. Okay, this is wonderful, isn't it? Because this is the solution. It tells us the problem, and then, in the doctor's opinion, and then we know what the solution is. First time in my whole life, I remember it was 2015, and I had a Big Book sponsor, and she read the doctor's opinion to me. And I said, oh my God, that's my experience. And here's the deal. It's not like our experience once in a while. It's every single time, 100% track record, that if I put sugar, flour, other ingredients into my system, I will absolutely react differently than non-compulsive overeaters. And it starts with, we know. And when it says that, it's not like we learned it in a book. It's not like I told my sponsee, here's how it's going to go down. She's shaking her head, nodding her head profusely, saying, yes, me too. So when I tell her something, an experience, and it's our experience, it's not my knowledge. It's my experience that confirms it over and over and over again, every single time. And God makes that possible, right? God makes it possible that this disease will kill us. And thank God we know that, because why would I do the program if I didn't have this experience every single time? I'm driving in a car, there's a piece of apple that's weighed and measured that fell on the bottom of the car. And I'm going 60 miles an hour and I reach down to get that slice of apple because don't you know, it's mine. It's part of my weighed and measured food, right? So I'm willing to put myself and other people in harm's way to get that weighed and measured apple, right? I have to lie because the disease is a heat-seeking missile and it wants me dead. And it doesn't matter who I am. I just happen to have this disease, right? I have to lie to get it. I'm, doing the dishes at Thanksgiving and there's a pie, of course there is. It's an apple pie and I grab the pieces of apple in the pie and I call it my fruit, right? I have to lie to make this work. But the greatest asset we have is our experience, right? Like it has to happen that every time it says equally positive, that whatever I put in my system that doesn't belong there, something happens every single time, And then the last line, the experience of any compulsive overeater will abundantly confirm this, right? That's why we're here, because of our experience, not because we read in a book that we've got a problem. We actually have an experience issue. And that is probably the greatest gift, right? Thank God for the disease. Why? Because it got me to God. Thank God for my dishonesty. Why? Because it got me to honesty. And I'll stop there. Thanks so much.
Hey, thank you very much, Wendy B. from Colorado. And although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your sharing to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So if you shared on either Wednesday or Thursday, please pass and let someone else share. Who would like to share?
Bruce E.
Bruce, I got you.
Wendy B. in Arizona.
Who was Arizona?
Wendy B.
Wendy B.
Ann B.
Ann, was that Ann B?
Okay. Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Vanessa G.
Vanessa G. We'll take one more. Let's line up. Okay, we have Bruce E., Wendy B., Ann B., and Vanessa G. And everyone mute your phone except Bruce. And Bruce, let us know where you're calling from. Good morning, Bruce.
Good morning, Mo, and good morning, everybody on the line. I'm Bruce E. I'm recovered. I'm in Southwest Florida. And very grateful to be on the line today and grateful that I'm not, white knuckling it through the food today. Yeah, and I agree with what I heard earlier. My experience itself is one of my greatest teachers. And my experience tells me that I was able to go for months. I don't think I went for years, but I was able to go for months doing very well. I remember this is the first 25 years of my OA history before I got into Vision. And I was looking through some old tapes that I had, and I dropped out of OA for a year or two there after I'd been in it about 7 or 8 years, and because I thought I was doing so good, and because I was falling into this thing about staying away from it for a month or so, or a couple of months, and I played this old tape, and it was a tape of me talking at a like a workshop, and I was doing really, really well, and I sounded well, and I was doing really good. But next thing I knew, pretty soon, you know, I was back into food again. So I went for a period of time doing well, but then guess what? As soon as I took any alcohol or any addictive foods into my system, bang, I was back into it again. And because the body, it says here, both in the bodily and mentally sense, which makes it virtually impossible for him to stop. Now he's back into it, and I couldn't stop. So I've gone for periods of time when I did well, other than that even. And then as soon as I took, you know, the addictive foods in, bang, I'm back into it again, you know. So this proved to me that I was an addict, that I am an addict, and it proves to me I need this program. And I've worked with a number of men in the prison system, women too, actually, in the jails, but in most of them were addicts. And they did great while they were in prison because they couldn't use any addictive substances in there, not food. A few of them were food addicts, but most of them were alcoholics and drug addicts. So they couldn't use any addictive substances while they were in prison, because if they did, then they'd tack on a whole bunch of months and years to their sentence, so they wouldn't, or they couldn't, had a rough time finding it or getting it. But as soon as they took any addictive substances back into their bodies, they're back being an addict again. You know, they're addict anyway, but they're back into being an active addict again. And that's exactly the same way with me. If I take in any addictive substances, thank you, into my system today, I'm back, and then I can't stop. So thank you for letting me share your experience.
Thank you very much. Bruce D. from Florida. Up next is Wendy B., followed by Ann B. Good morning, Wendy.
Good morning. This is Wendy B., recovered in Arizona. And this paragraph is just so true. You know, we all have stories, you know, of our dieting days, you know, when we were trying to eat in moderation and trying to limit the amount of our addictive substances and, that we would have, you know, in order to stick to our diet regime, you know, that we were trying to follow at the moment, you know, and, you know, and I was, you know, giving myself pep talks and listening to motivational speakers and just renewing my resolve, you know, to try harder. And, you know, and they just only lasted a short time because, you know, I didn't understand the concept of being abstinent from my addictive substances. And, you know, I was doomed to failure, you know, repeated failure over and over, you know, until finally, you know, I gave up on dieting, you know, and at this point, you know, in my experience, I tried to just accept myself fat. You know, I would just give in to my cravings and eat whatever I wanted. You know, and then at some point my weight would balance out, you know, and I would just learn to live with it. And, you know, and that delusion burst too, you know, when I realized, you know, I wasn't going to level out at some high weight. You know, I thought my energy output at some point would match my calorie input, you know, and I would be able to maintain, you know, and I found out, you know, that was impossible, that I always, always, always ate more than I burned. You know, and I just kept on gaining and gaining and gaining, you know, and it's only by the grace of God, you know, that I decided I'd had enough, you know, and I didn't want to stay on that train and become morbidly obese. And, you know, I saw where that road was going, you know, and at that point, you know, I came back to the rooms of OA and found a big book recovery and read the doctor's opinion and learned about entire abstinence, you know, and I just am so grateful. You know, I get to live free of my addictive substances today, you know, and it's just such a blessing to not having these substances control me. And that's all I have. Thank you for letting me share.
Hey, Wendy B. from Arizona. Thank you very much. Up next is Ann B., followed by Vanessa G., and after Vanessa, I'll take another lineup of names. Good morning, Ann.
Hey, this is Ann B. from compulsive overeater from Westchester United Intergroup in New York. And, you know, during the shutdown, I lost an additional 10 pounds from what I had been maintaining. my weight had been just sort of inching up a little bit, even though I was following my own rules of abstinence. It had been inching up a little bit. But the thing is, during the shutdown, I never went to a restaurant, and I was never willing to weigh and measure in restaurants. And now, you know, the shutdown's over, I'm getting back into my old routine, I'm going into the city, and I'm eating some meals in restaurants because it's, you know, it's easier than packing my food. And I'm almost back up to where I was. And I told myself, you know, I'm gonna be more careful in restaurants, and I'm not gonna eat so much. But it's just the same as it was before. And you know, if I want to have that 10 pounds less, I'm gonna have to bring a scale into restaurants, and I don't know if I'm gonna be willing to do that. But oh, I'm sorry about the bird. Anyway, but the disease is still there, you know, and I can't. I think somebody said time. Yeah, and I can't will it away.
No,
so I'll pass.
Nope. You still have time.
Okay. So I can't will it away. You know, it's still there. And so I'll pass.
Okay. Thank you very much, Anne B. from New York. And before I take Vanessa, let me remind everybody where we're at. We're in the There Is a Solution in the Big Book on page 22, the fourth paragraph down. We know that while the alcoholic keeps away from drink, and it ends on the top of the next page with the experience of any alcoholic will abundantly confirm this. And after I take Vanessa, I'll take another lineup of names. Good morning, Vanessa.
Good morning, everyone. This is Vanessa G., recovered in New Mexico from compulsive overeating. And I needed to share this morning just because if I can keep even one person from suffering as I did for over three decades, trying to obtain continuous abstinence in this program, it would be worth it. These three words, any alcohol, whatever, are words that eluded me for all of that time. I came to Overeaters Anonymous fresh off the steps in another program, recognizing that I had an issue with food. I was told, you know, three meals a day, nothing in between, one day at a time. And I adopted, you know, that particular food plan. And it worked until it didn't. You know, within the first year, I lost all my weight, became a normal-weighted person, and thought, oh, my goodness, you know, this is fairly simple and fairly easy. The problem is that alcohol, for me, comes, you know, in the form also of many foods, many ingredients. And determining that was something that no one ever sat down with me and asked me to do. And I found some things out. You know, I avoided, you know, what people called overt or recreational sugar. But I didn't understand this concept of entire abstinence, of not letting any alcoholic substance into my system. And eventually, you know, every time that I would obtain abstinence again, eventually it would go away. And I find myself binging again. I've, you know, experienced that over and over again for over 30 years until I came to this meeting and was walked through the doctor's opinion, especially paying attention to those three words and finding out for myself that that meant not just, you know, sugar or flour or overt sugar or whatever. It meant I needed to be meticulous and not take any alcoholic substance, including, you know, those that were lookalikes and artificial, into my system, because I was going to set myself up. Maybe not that particular day, but eventually I would lose my abstinence. The physical part of this disease is step zero, I think, figuring out and determining for ourselves what it is for us that we need to abstain from. And that has saved my life, doing that first before I actually go forward. And thank you for letting me share.
And thank you very much, Vanessa G. from New Mexico. And although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your sharing to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So we are on page 22, the fourth paragraph down. We know that while the alcoholic keeps away from drink, and it ends at the top of page 23, the experience of any alcoholic will abundantly confirm this. So who would like to share on this go-around?
Barbara E., New Jersey.
Barbara E.
Tiffany C.
Tiffany C.
Holly H.
Holly H. So I have Barbara E., Tiffany C., Holly H. Anybody else want to get in this lineup? Got plenty of time. Okay. Will everybody silence your phones except Barbara E.? Barbara? Let us know where you're calling from, and then I'll have Tiffany C. after Barbara. Good morning, Barbara.
Good morning, and thank you for your service. Happy Friday, everyone. This is Barbara E., a volume critical level compulsive overeater living in the state of New Jersey. And I have to say I've taken so many geographical tours and cures in my life to try and curb my desire to eat until I was full and then just to keep eating even more. I took pills, I took shots, I went to diet camps, I went to pay and ways, I migrated from one to another, and every one of them worked. It was miraculous. I'd lose 100 pounds. No, I didn't lose them. I'd send them on vacation. You know why? Because they always came back with souvenirs, and I found that I would gain the weight back. And then someone brought me to a new program called Overeaters Anonymous. At least it was new to me. And I said, well, I have to lose my pain, my misery, my excess weight, the doctors who are scared for me, my family doesn't know what to make of me, because I was a real hot mess when I was into the food. And what I didn't realize was that this disease I have is sneaky. It's going to kill me slowly with a knife, a fork, and a spoon if I didn't do something drastic. I had to do it not just once in a while, not take what you want and leave the rest, but do everything else. Because, yes, I did slip back into relapse, and I kept saying, oh, it's only a couple of pounds. What could that harm me? I'll take that off in a week. Well, I didn't take it off in a week, and they end. Soon, a sliver became a slice, became a slice, a slob, became everything that I didn't want. So I had to understand the concept of balance, physical, emotional, and spiritual. And they said to me, stay around for 10 meetings, and if you're unhappy, we'll refund your misery. So I came back. I just practiced humility and said, well, I'm back again. I'm on my second round. The first was so much easier. The second is much harder, at least it was for me. So I have to say that for me, honesty, truth is always the same. Honesty changes with my awareness. In the disease, I lied to myself and I lied to others. And that's just wishful fantasy thinking versus honest thinking. And hope, when I'm in these meetings, I hear my own story over and over again. And that gives me hope, because if you can do it, I can do it, and I'm not alone anymore. and safe. You'll have to wait for another day, but we all know how important faith is, because if I don't put my faith in you and others, I know I'll surely slip into the hole, and it'll be so big, I'll never get out again. Have a beautiful weekend, everyone. I pass.
Hey, thank you, Barbara E. from New Jersey. Up next is Tiffany C., followed by Holly H. After Holly, I'll take another lineup of names. Good morning, Tiffany.
Good morning. This is Tiffany C., recovered in Oklahoma. Thank you so much for your service and everybody that shared so far. I'm just really grateful today for the experience of all of the compulsive overeaters that confirmed this paragraph to be true when I first came in to program and was able to listen for the longest time and relate. There's a lot of experience that I haven't gotten. This is my first time in OA. I've been here for a couple of years almost. And I don't have the experience by God's grace of relapse, but I'm the addict that likes to go and experiment. And after coming into the rooms, I get to learn that I don't necessarily need to experiment anymore, and that I can use the experience from others and really just finally listen. And then also, I quit lying to myself that wasn't possible for me, or that I'm an exception to the rules and I'm different and I won't have that kind of pain. I am super grateful for the experience that other people have shared on the line. Also, my Ebby, when I'd first got introduced to OA, she had mentioned something about she only puts things into her body intuitively. And that was such a profound thing that I had heard. I never experienced food as an intuitive way of, living. And that really reminded me of this paragraph because, God definitely has to pick what goes into my body. And then my higher consciousness really needs to connect to God and decide what's good for me and what's not. And then I had to get to the point where I didn't want to live in that lower vibration where I was just really low. And going back and forth from, I used to get really high from bouncing back. And this last time I had to, I had 200 or I was 100 pounds of excess. I knew that, I just was like, I can't do this anymore. I can't do this to my body anymore. And I think that was a good point for me, a good breaking point, because it quit being a high for me, bouncing back. And, that driving force was me. I can take care of this. And then that moment where I was just like, no, I can't anymore. It's too hard on me. So thank you so much. I hope you guys all have a wonderful day. I'll pass.
Thank you very much, Tiffany C. from Oklahoma. And before I take Holly, I'll remind you where we're at. We're on page 22 of There Is a Solution, the fourth paragraph down. We know that while the alcoholic keeps away from drink, and it ends at the top of page 23, the experience of any alcoholic will abundantly confirm this. After Holly, I'll take another lineup of names. Good morning, Holly.
Good morning. Thank you for your service. This is Holly H. in Cleveland, Ohio.
Holly, I can't hear you very clearly.
Oh, okay. Hold on.
Did we lose you?
Okay. This is Holly H. in Cleveland, Ohio.
Much better. Thank you.
The first sentence, we know that while the alcoholic keeps away from drink, as he may do for months or years, he reacts much like other men. So true of me. But if I don't keep up my spiritual part of the program and keep working the steps and keep, you know, using the tools, then I become a little delusional that I am like other men. And I had some accidents with natural peanut butter, of all things, earlier this year, where I was had to give it to my dogs for pills and such. And then I thought, oh, I can have a little bit too. And so I did that one weekend. And then the next weekend, when the pills came around, I did the same thing. And then the next day, I was like, oh, I'd like some more of that peanut butter. And I was in the peanut butter again. And I had to, you know, say, this, what are you doing? You know, what are you doing? And so I had to really examine. And I forgot to say, I'm recovered at this point. But at this time, I was not recovered, because I was messing around with food that's not mine. And I, you know, I started to think I'm like normal men. Well, after a few of those incidents, then all of a sudden peanut butter became like I needed to breathe. You know, it was like I needed it so bad. And it was a great reminder. I'm like, Holly, it's time to, you know, reevaluate your program and your spiritual and program. And because I knew, I'm equally positive that once I take an alcoholic food into my system, that something happens bodily and mentally. I knew that, but the delusion started to come in, and I have enough experience to confirm this. You know, I have years and years and years of confirming experience, and that's what convicted me when I came in these rooms, was that it was like it finally made sense. I'm like, oh, I understand now what's going on and why I've been in this, you know, vicious circle for 30 odd years or more of my life that I can remember. And so for me, I have to keep in the steps, in using the tools and keeping my fit spiritual condition, or the delusion of, you know, my disease is, you know, in the background doing push-ups and just waiting for me to think that I'm like normal people, even though I have a wealth of evidence and the self-knowledge to know that if I take these substances into my body, that I will have this reaction each and every time. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Holly H. from Ohio. And although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your sharing to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So I would like to share on this paragraph on page 22. It begins with, we know that while the alcoholic keeps away from drink, and it ends at the top of page 23, the experience of any alcoholic will abundantly confirm this. I will take another lineup of names. Who was that?
Sorry, Hillary B.
Hillary B. I got Hillary.
Annabelle Z. in Washington.
Annabelle Z. Okay.
Alex K.
Alex K. Anyone else? Hillary B., Annabelle Z., and Alex K. So let's take those and see if we have any time after that. Hillary, good morning, Hillary. Let us know where you're calling from.
Good morning. Hillary B. in Southern California. Compulsive overeater, recovered for today, and grateful, grateful, grateful. This paragraph tells me, as long as I stay away from my alcoholic foods, I'm okay. As if that's a little thing, you know? Sorry, huh? I'm walking. And so I have to remember, the number one thing is not food. I mean, it's about the food, don't get me wrong. I have to put the food down. I have put the food down so many times over the last 40 years, I can't tell you. And I've picked it back up again every time. So what do I have to do to keep it down like I have the last a little over a year? I have to maintain my fit spiritual condition. Well, what the heck does that mean? It means I have to work the steps and have a spiritual awakening. Is that enough? No, I have to maintain the spiritual awakening. And that requires continuing to work the steps. It's step 10, step 11, step 12. I have to, every time something bothers me or when I'm disturbed, I can do a step 10. And what a step 10 shows me is my troubles are of my own making. Every time I do a step 10, I get to see I'm the one causing my own pain. I'm the one causing my stress. I'm the one causing my discomfort. And that's hard to see for me without a step 10 because I love to blame other people. I have to give my will and my life over to God. Whatever I call my higher power, my divine force for good, my divine source. And I have to live in that and do a practice every single day because I always wake up with an attitude of blame. I always wake up a compulsive overeater. I always wake up wanting to change the way I feel. I have to go right to God first thing so that I can set the tone for the day and remember what I need to do today. And then step 12, I have to give it away. I have to give it away. Sometimes it's hard to sponsor. Sometimes it's hard for me to share on a meeting, but I have to give it away however I give it away or I'm going to lose it. And I learn so much about myself when I help another person. I see my arrogance. I see my my disease that I am getting relief from. I see so much that without sponsoring, I'm doomed. So that's way enough out of me. Thank you for listening.
And thank you very much, Hillary B. from California. Up next is Annabelle Z., followed by Alex K. Annabelle, tell us where you're calling from. Can't hear you. Press star 1 to unmute.
I'm sorry. I was talking away. I thought I'd muted before. sorry. So this is Annabelle, and I am a compulsive eater in Washington State. And thank you for your service this morning, and thank you, Wendy, for leading and opening up this morning. Honestly, I wasn't going to share, and I wasn't going to share because I want to share on Monday or Tuesday because I just want to get into the next two paragraphs. And I'm like, I have so much to say about these next two paragraphs. And of course, my higher power is going, really, really, do you? You know so much, do you? And it was just kind of comical because I realized he's nudging me. And what I really need to do is just claim my seat, that I'm here, that I listen every morning, that I am, that I struggle with that, something someone was talking about, having it in an intuitive way of eating. And it's something I've been doing with my sponsor who really slowed me down in my connecting with my higher power, so that when I think during the day, and it's not just about food, it's about everything, and just go, okay, God, what would you have me do? God, is this what you want? And to just really be in that, asking for intuitive, flatter decision every like not just the morning, but throughout the day with every decision. And it's been really a different way of acting in life rather than reacting to life with emotions that then make me get all nervous and maybe want to stuff myself or numb out. So it's a new way of life. And I know there's a lot of, that's like, I don't know, there's a lot of controversy in a way about this idea, different food plans and quote intuitive eating and all these different things. But the bottom line is this, I am in, if I'm in touch with my higher power, if I'm in line with his will for me, nothing really is going to get in that, well, nothing's going to force me back to the food if I'm in line with God. And that's a proper use of my will. So I'm just really grateful to be here this morning, and I'm glad I spoke up because I should share once a week on the line. So thanks.
Thank you very much, Annabelle Z from Washington. And I think our last share will be Alex K. Let us know where you're calling from, Alex.
Hi, Mo. Thank you. Thanks, everyone, for being here. Alex K. in California, compulsive eater, recovered just for today and recovering every day. There were times when I could eat a little bit of sugar, my drug of choice, moderately. I could eat moderately for short periods of time, and that would convince me that I wasn't a compulsive eater. I think I was in control, but this disease is cunning, baffling, and powerful. And it's true that once I put any sugar in my body, something happens to me physically and mentally. I may not see it immediately, but eventually it'll lead to out-of-control binging. Once I eat even a little bit, it becomes okay to have a little bit more, and then a little bit more becomes normal to eat it. And I start, I remember thinking, I can have just a little binge. I can just compulsively eat a little bit and still have peace and serenity. But, of course, that's impossible. I start believing the lies of the disease, like a little bite won't hurt. This time will be different. And the insanity starts creeping back in again until the disease completely takes over. Till my body and my mind are yelling for more and more sugar, and that's all I can hear and all I can think about and care about. I'm powerless. My willpower is useless against this disease. My only defense is my higher power. Only my higher power can remove my compulsion, and I'm so grateful. I surrendered, and I have received this wonderful, miraculous gift of freedom and peace with food, and I don't have to hurt myself with food today. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you very much, Alex K., and all those who shared today. I'm back again on Monday. Let's see. We will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. And I will now ask Chanel T. to read page 164. Good morning, Chanel.
Yes. Hi. Thank you, Mo. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, great. And I lost my page, so give me 2 seconds, everybody. You're so patient with me. Thank you. I had it, too. It was right in front of me. My apologies. All right, here we go. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. By the way, I'm a compulsive eater. I'm grateful to be here. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.